Good evening. This is Terry from Colorado, and this is the NLA Hams Net. Now, we hold this net every week at about 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. I'm in Colorado, so it's 6 o'clock my time, and I always have to convert. But at least you know when it happens. Everyone's welcome to join, and we're glad to have anybody. Ask any question you like, as long as it in a roundabout way or better. Concerns NLA or hams or both. I am KI0RE if you want to look me up. QRZ.com is the best place, and Z means Z. That's a Canadian thing to where you can tell the difference between B, C, E, and D, and Z. Okay, last week we ended thereabouts on threats to life and property and how you can, in an emergency, you can go and take care of those things if you need to communicate. I think the reg is in here. Part 97.403 says, no provision of these rules prevents the use by an amateur station of any means of radio communication at its disposal to provide essential communication needs in connection with the immediate safety of human life and immediate protection of property when normal communication systems are not available.
Oh, what page are you on?
I'm on page 6-26. Where should I be?
Say again, please.
I'm on page 6-26 of the ham radio, the ARRL ham radio license manual, third edition, for technicians.
Thanks.
All right.
Yep, got it.
I had that marked as where I was supposed to be, but I might be right. Covering something again. So you can pick up any kind of radio if the situation or the emergency situation dictates or needs it. If that's the only way you can get help, go get help. When life or limb or property is concerned. In an emergency situation, may use whatever communication means is at hand to respond. Any means on any frequency. If a fire department radio or marine single sideband transceiver is all that's available, by all means, use it to call any station you think might hear you. And that's one of the points, too. It goes into it a little later. When you talk, you want to talk enough to where you're giving people the information, but you give them time to pick up the radio and reply back to you, because it might be that nobody's listening, and you kind of got to do it all again. And that goes into the next one, distress calls. If you're in immediate danger, require immediate emergency help, you may make a distress call on any frequency which you have a chance of being heard in these circumstances. Here's what to do. And these are all dotted. So you should say all of these every time and then listen for 30 seconds or a minute. And 30 seconds is a very long time, but that's what it takes to allow somebody to pick up the radio and transmit back to you at times. One, on a voice mode, say, Mayday, Mayday, Mayday. Now, it says Mayday, 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 but that's not the exact word. It's a French word that when Americans hear it, they hear Mayday, Mayday, Mayday. On CW, you send SOS three times. That's did-did-it, da-da-da, did-did-it, did-did-it, da-da-da, did-did-it, did-did-it, da-da-da, did-did-it. Everybody in the world knows that pattern. Well, if they've been exposed to it. Mayday should not be confused with a pan-pan urgency call. Pan-pan means I just want to talk to somebody, but it's non-emergency. It's urgent, but non-emergency. Followed by any station, come in, please. So you'd say, Mayday, 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 any station, come in, please. And you would continue. You wouldn't unkey right there. you identify the transmission with your call sign. I would say KI0RE regardless of what frequency I was on, because that's my call sign. I'm not authorized on any other frequency except the handbams, but any radio I pick up, I'm going to say KI0RE. Give your location with enough detail to be located. State the nature of the situation. There's an accident at County Road 3.5 and 56th Avenue, 3 miles west of town or something. I don't know what it would be, but give enough information so they know where to go. And describe the type of assistance required. Well, we have one person that looks like they're bleeding really badly. I'm trying to stop the bleeding now. Another person with a broken leg, so I need some help out here right now. And that's just, I'm giving a sample of what you might say. That's not really happening. Give any other pertinent information. So, the bridge is washed out, so you got to come in from North 3rd Street to get to 3.5 because you can't do it on 3.5, something like that. So you say all of that. So he says, Mayday, 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 any station, come in, please. I am KI0RE. My location is County Road 3.5 and 4th Avenue, 3 miles west of town. The nature of the situation is there's been a wreck, an accident, and we got one person that's I'm trying to start to stop the bleeding on right now. Another person has a broken leg and is in great pain. I need some medical assistance right away. And please, the bridge is out, so make sure you come down County Road 3 instead of 3.5 because that bridge is gone. Any station, please reply. And then you unkey. And that sounds like an easy thing to do is to unkey. It's not. A lot of people want to hold on to that key because they know it's out there and they want to establish that connection. But as long as you hold that key down, people can't talk back to you. And you want people to talk back. Pause for any station to answer. Repeat the procedure as long as possible or until you get an answer. And sometimes you might have to get a new rag and put it back on to keep the pressure on to stop the bleeding. Lay down the mic. Take care of the person in front of you first. And if you get a chance, because it looks like the bleeding stopped and you can hold it with one hand, grab the mic again and do it again. The reason for giving all the information during each call is so that if you can't hear responding stations, they'll still learn where you are, what help you need. Under no circumstances make a false distress call or allow others to do that, because you can go to jail for that. If you hear a distress call on any frequency, you may respond. Give somebody a chance to answer, whoever the authorities are, and then go with that. If you hear one of them talking to the person, fine. Listen in, because they may need your help, or it might be right down your street. You never know. And you want to be able to help if you can. If not, then just listen to the proper authorities taking care of it. Now, we've had some hurricanes lately, and I guarantee you there's been hams out there that have handled emergencies or got the word over to the right people. I don't know of any, but I bet you they're out there. Another thing it mentions here is 2182 kilohertz. That's 2.182 kilohertz. That's about twice the frequency of your mid-band AM radio. That's a marine frequency, I believe. It's outside the amateur band, such as on the International Marine Distress Calling frequency. That frequency can go all around the earth. So it's something that you don't want to use unless you absolutely have to. But also, if you're not talking to anybody else, that's a very good one to have your radio keyed to. And if anything happens, you don't go have to try and figure out what dial you got to turn or what button you have to push to make it talk on 2182. It's already there. So it, in effect, helps you too. Any questions so far? Training. I can't emphasize training enough. There's training online. There's training with your local sheriff's department or police department or with FEMA. I encourage you, like it says in the second paragraph, to join ARES or RACES. Normally, those groups are loosely connected to people in a particular ham radio club. So tie in with your local ham radio club and find out who runs the ACES or the ARES and what their number is. Call them and tell them you want to help out. And they'll say, okay, we need this, this, and this. Come on down. You can always help a lot. And there's different ways to help. And being in communication with the person involved or the ham radio club, you get to hear about what's coming. Lots of times they keep it quiet so that not everybody is, everybody knows, but the people who are volunteering. And as volunteer, you might be able to go and help out, and that's very good practice. Also, I don't want to disparage you, but when you get your license, talk on the radio. Get used to talking on a repeater and what you do and shouldn't do. You begin to develop a sense of when it's good to talk and when it's not, what you can reach and what you can't reach. That is all good training for when the real thing happens or they have a big emergency test. October of every year, ARL sponsors an annulated simulated emergency test. And then if your club participates in ARRL Field Day, you'll hear the words Field Day anytime you talk to HAMP. Field Day is the last weekend of June, the last full weekend of June. And it starts usually on noon Saturday and goes to noon Sunday. You can adopt that and change it how you want. As you notice, if it's noon here, it's already 2 p.m. in the east, so they might start two hours early. Well, you can move yours up 2 hours if that's what you want to do. Doesn't matter, but it's 24 hours, and you try and make as many contacts as you can. That's just to see who you can talk to and who it's difficult to talk to and develop good, courteous manners on the radio so you do it like it's second nature. I really encourage people to go and get some training, talk to the local club, talk to the emergency management people in your area, and then participate in Field Day. See what it's like. Emergency communications and your employer. Many emergency and public safety personnel have obtained an amateur radio license, attracted by our services' flexibility and adaptability. Many employers have also taken note of the services' capabilities. This has the potential to conflict with Part 97, 113, okay, forbids amateurs from having a financial interest in their communication. You're not supposed to use your radio to talk, and I guess it's got the actual text here. No amateur shall transmit communications in which the station licensee or control operator has a pecuniary interest, including communications on behalf of an employer. And that's absolutely right. So you can't use ham radio, even if you have a license, to say, hey, Joe, have you delivered that pipe yet? Or, hey, Joe, have you finished that job, picked it up, and are you headed back yet? You can't do that. But you can say, you can call home and say, oh, are you going to meet me at the bank for a loan? That's okay, because you don't have a pecuniary interest in it. You're not making any money off of it. It's you trying to coordinate with your better half or your worse half, you know how you look at it. and get there on time, and you don't have a telephone. So anyway, it can be used, but be careful. If you're going to make money or your company's going to make money, I would suggest you don't do that. There's only two exceptions to this rule. They are Part 97-101 C and D. Teachers who use ham radio as part of their instruction and operators employed to operate a club station that transmits bulletins, code practice, at least 40 hours per week on at least 6 amateur bands. Well, I tell you, the only station I know of does that is W1AW up in Connecticut. They are the ARRL, and you can tune in to their their transmission and practice copy. They tell you where they're copying it from, and then you hear the person keying the code, and then you can compare how well you did on your copy. Many radio clubs are made up of employees of a particular employer. This is permitted, as is communications while you're at work, as long as it is not on behalf of your employer, and your employer permits it. Participating in training exercises and drill organized by your employer is allowed, but only according to the restrictions spelled out in Part 97. The drills are limited in number, as 97.113. Their limited number, duration is a balance between readiness and keeping amateur radio free of commercial operating. If you have any questions about this type of drill, ask your ARES emergency coordinator. That's a good person, because they're usually very well versed in what's allowed and what's not. Okay, if anybody has any questions, interrupt me, please. It is important to reserve the bright line between the strictly volunteer foundation of amateur radio and many commercial and government uses of radio. Worthy though they may be, communications on a regular basis that could reasonably be furnished through other radio services are not permitted. If you can do it up on a different band, like your company has a commercial radio frequency, do it there. Don't do it down the ham band. News messages and reports are not considered emergency communication by FCC. You are not allowed to relay such information as on behalf of broadcasters via amateur radio. Inform reporters who ask you to relay reports that you can't do that under FCC rules. If you are confused about what is and what is not permitted, review the guidelines published in the Communications of Amateur Radio, the rules and the risks, the issues, and it's available at the ARRL. Special activities. I'm going to go on to section 6.7 on page 6-27. We've just discussed a few of the many different ham stuff that you can do. And then they talk about DXing, awards, and contesting. You know those 3,133 counties that the NLA has organized or partially organized? There's an award that you can get, and I don't see it here, but it's called the Worked All Counties, and that means you've talked to somebody in every one of those counties. It takes a while to do that, because not always is someone on in a particular county, and they might not be on the right frequency. So it's kind of difficult sometimes, but people check it off. They want one from, like here in Colorado, Broomfield County, Boulder County, Denver County, Pitkin County, Summit County, Anon Park County, on and on and on. DXing is when you're calling somebody from a distance station. Distance is DX. And that's really cool, because they also have stuff that you talk to all over the world, and you check off these countries that have amateur radio in them. Not every country in the earth has amateur radio. Some do not. If you take your ham radio with you, make sure you verify that it's okay to possess that equipment in the country you're going to, all the countries you're going to, because some of them will confiscate it. So just be careful. And then there's an example down there of the 1,000 miles per watt award recognizes a low power station at their ability to communicate over long distances. That's cool. And then it talks about field day and over the river and through the woods, physical type contest known as fox hunting. That's fox hunting. Fox hunting's cool. And anybody who wants, I will send them my local, I just got it today, that's why I remembered it. I will send them an example of a local club, ham radio club, newsletter. Mine is called the Barks Bark. Bark stands for Boulder Amateur Radio Club. They're associated with the local Aries, and the Aries is Boulder Amateur Radio Emergency Service, so they call it Boulder County Aries, so it's BCARES. And I can, anybody wants, just send me an email. My my email address, I think, is on the notice that Jan sends out every week. I hope it is. Call me. I know my phone number's there, so call me and I'll send you one. But I just got one today, so send me it if you want a copy of it. I'll send it what it looks like. Otherwise, get in touch with your local ham club and offer to start writing it up. You'll find out more about the club if you start writing the articles. And then there's special events, and it might be for DXers. I think I've told the story before where I went with my family to Washington, D.C. to take the tour. We spent a week up there, and one of the things we did, we went to the Smithsonian, one part of the Smithsonian in the basement, and there was an active rig down there, and I said, when do they operate? And they said, they operate on, I don't know, Saturdays and Sundays from 2 to 3. It was a very small time. It wasn't going to be while we were there. So I wrote a message, and he gave it to the ham, and I said, we are going to be, every year, the Boulder Amateur Radio Club Juniors, Bark Juniors, have what's called a W0W station, which is wow, and it's for kids, just to make all the contacts they can, and they usually do it on the Saturday before Labor Day. And so I put that down. And here we are tuning across the bands, trying to make as many contacts as we can for our special event because we're starting a new year teaching kids about ham radio. And by the way, the people who used to run that, they've both passed on. But during their time here, they helped over 200 kids get their ham license. That is community service. I love it. Anyway, they're tuning through the bands and on that day, and it's the W0W radio station, and sure enough, here comes the Smithsonian asking for a contact. And so we gladly contacted them, and that was really a good day. And then we got a QSL card from the Smithsonian Institute saying, here, you contacted on this frequency, and you know what is, what's on a QSL card, this frequency, this date, this time, and now I can't remember what I was going to say. Anyway, you know what a QSL card is, and it's really cool. So I've heard them do special events from the submarine in Chicago and battleships out in the harbor of a particular place or aircraft carrier, all over the place. And they're really neat to get those because they're special events and they're only there for a few days or maybe a few hours. Satellites. We're going to talk satellites for a minute. There's a lot to talk about satellites. Theoretically, you can communicate for at least one-third of the distance across the face of the Earth on a satellite. It's just a little less than half, because the satellite isn't as far out as the moon. The moon can see just about everybody. But satellites, they're up there, and most of them are in low Earth orbit. That means they're moving. So what happens, and it goes through a few different things down there on the just below the middle of the page. apogee, the point of a satellite's orbit that is furthest from the Earth, a beacon, a signal from the satellite containing information about a satellite. That was when Sputnik went up. Everybody was listening to their beacon and trying to interpret what the different signals meant. And hams all over the Earth listened to that thing every day until it died. The batteries fell out. Doppler shift. Now, here's something important. A shift in a signal's frequency due to relative motion between the satellite and the Earth. Since they're in the low Earth orbit, they're flying at approximately 17,000, 500 miles an hour? Well, if you think about it, as they come up off the horizon, they're traveling to the side. And they're coming at you as they get above about 10 degrees. So they're coming at you. So it's going to be like one of those trains, the Doppler shift. The train's horn sounds higher when it's coming at you and sounds lower once it passes. So what you have to do is set up a few memories and you do one click down, and that might be a kilohertz, might be 10 kilohertz. You get to know it. I haven't done it in a while, so I can't tell you. But to acquire the signal, you're listening not on the output frequency, but just a little above it. Since it's moving towards you, the Doppler shift will be there. And then as it climbs in the air, it starts getting fuzzy. You turn it to the next one, and it's sharp again. And you might do that 5 times. In a 5-minute period, and then it's right overhead. Well, overhead, it's not coming at you. It's not going away from you. So you're right on frequency, and then you already have it programmed to do the same thing in reverse as it goes over the horizon again. As it goes in the air, you've got to turn the frequency down to lower and lower steps because the Doppler effect will make the radio sound like it's on a little bit different frequency than what's stated. Perigee, the point of satellite's orbit, is nearest the Earth. The Keplerian elements, a set of numbers that describe the satellite's orbit so that it can be tracked. And then low Earth orbit, or LEO, an elliptical order, an orbit with a large difference between apogee and perigee. What's the nice thing about an elliptical orbit? Why would anybody want to do that? Well, it just so happens that if the long end that takes a long time, where the perigee is over you, the satellite's going to be in the air a whole lot longer that you can access it. If it's a near circular orbit on a LEO, the low Earth orbit, it goes over in about 10, 15 minutes. It's done, maybe 5 minutes, depending upon what the orbit is and how fast it's going. So you really got to read up on the characteristics of this particular satellite. What frequency is it listening on? What frequency is it transmitting on? Is it listen only? Is it just beaconing? What type of orbit it has? And the Keplerian elements, Keplerian elements is a set of, 10 numbers. And they specify the direction and the position when that was taken, or when those Keplerian elements were taken. And so usually it's once you establish a stable orbit, they take the Keplerian elements, and that's what they pass out. You can find on the Internet lists of satellites and their Keplerian elements, and then you use a program like, what's that program that used to be around? It even went up on the space shuttle, and now I can't remember the name of it. It's been a while since I used it, but even the space shuttle thought it was such a good program that they were using on the computers in the space shuttle to decide when they were over a particular area and who they could talk to. Those Keplerian elements, if you put them into that program, and there are other programs now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, what's that Stellarium? will accept Keplerian elements and give you the position of a satellite, and you can kind of look at it, and it'll show you a picture of where it is, so you kind of know where to point your antenna, because they're way out there. When you think about it, they might be 150, 200 miles up, and since there's nothing between you and them except atmosphere, you should be able to talk to it, but not always. Sometimes you just need a little more power, and having an antenna that's directional pays off big time when you're talking about something like that. Anybody have any questions on satellites? I'll talk. I'll wait to talk. Okay, I don't hear anything. Interrupt me. They usually go up on one band and they come down on the other, so they might be listening on UHF and it might be transmitting on VHF. It just all depends. And a lot of these satellites, believe it or not, are ham satellites, and they have what's called the OSCAR program. And what that is that hams will build a satellite, and they'll send it to the places that decide what goes on a satellite and what doesn't. And if they need ballast, they take out some of the ballast and put in this ham satellite. And all it does is they will provide a turn-on switch when they launch it. And it goes out, and they put it on a little bit different angle, so it's got a little bit different orbit. But it's a tiny little box, sometimes as big as a Kleenex box or smaller. A bread box, smaller than a bread box. And you see those. And some of those are the satellites that are up there that you can communicate with. It's just a flying repeater that's circling the Earth just as fast as it needs to go to where it falls around the Earth. Oh, there's a couple I missed. PacSat, a satellite equipped with FM packet radio for digital communications and spin fading, signal fading caused by rotation of the satellite and its antenna. Now, that's interesting. Remember we talked about, beyond a prior thing, I think this spring, we talked about the polarization. And lots of times you can turn the antenna and follow the polarization once you get used to what it's doing. And it might be slowly turning, it might be turning quickly, and it'll fade in and out and fade in and out and in and out and in and out real quick. And you just kind of got to know what that particular satellite is doing. So you can turn it and follow it, or you can just kind of wait for it to come back around before you say anything or do anything. I like to follow them. If I can nail what the polarity is, I go ahead and follow that. Once the signal's real strong, I just kind of turn it at how fast I think. I turn the antenna that I'm pointing at it. I use a Yagi and point it straight at where I think the satellite is. And sometimes I'm right on, and sometimes I'm not. As you can tell, I've not talked a lot on satellites, but I sure think that's cool with my HT. 5 watts to talk to a satellite 100 miles away and have it reply. That's pretty cool. I've seen people do it, but I haven't been able to do it yet. Anybody got anything they want to say? Okay, use those Keplerian elements, the Keps, they call them, and you put it into some of them will tell you the Doppler shift. The ISS is going around all the time. They got all kinds of things going on it all the time. All the ham radio, all the astronauts coming out of Houston, they all try and get their ham radio license so any of them can talk to you up there. And sometimes that's what they want to do. They want to spend their hour where they can go in the little cupola and look at the world go by. A lot of them, they want to make as many contacts as they can on the International Space Station. So they do. And you can You can find out a lot of things. They're a lot more stable because they're not spinning as much, not nearly as fast. Or they don't appear to be spinning as fast. If you think about it, they want to turn their solar panels towards the sun, and they can turn them a certain amount, but they have to kind of adjust it every once in a while. But it stays pointing. So if you point it in some orientation towards the Polaris, the North Star, and think about it going around the Earth, well, different pieces of the Earth see different orientation for the space station as it goes around. And anybody wants me to explain that, send me an email, and I will do so. I'll put you to a webpage that does, at least. Okay. They talk about squirting the bird when you want to talk to a satellite. Okay. For more information on amateur satellites, investigate the website of AMSAT. AMSAT is the organization that coordinates the building and launch of most amateur satellites. You'll find a lot of information about how satellites work, how to find them on the air and in the sky. There's also a bulletin so that you can stay up with what's the latest. And, I wish we had just a little more time. Let's see, special modes. They talk about video. We talked a little bit about the TV last week. There's also slow scan TV. SSTV, when the Viking. When Viking went to Mars, they had a slow scan TV. That's what took those pictures of going 180-degree panorama or 360-degree panorama of the Martian surface. It was a slow-scan TV. Really interesting stuff to get along, and you can listen to those and actually receive media scatter and moon bounce. We talked about this a little bit, too. You can actually bounce a radio signal off the ionization behind a meteorite that's come in, a falling star, whatever you want to call it. And people can have made contacts like that. It's a very highly skilled and highly technical thing. And you can also bounce it off the moon, and that's really cool because the moon's only 225,000 miles away, and it takes a whole lot of power, which means you have to have a big station and especially a big antenna. And then radio control. The final special mode is hybrid of ham radio and modeling, RC. You're probably familiar with the remote control cars, trucks, boats, planes operated by RC hobbyists. You're probably not aware that special amateur frequencies on the 50 megahertz band are set aside for RC telecommand signals. If you're on RC frequencies near 27, 72, and 75 megahertz, telecommand signals are one-way transmission intended to initiate, modify, or terminate functions of a controlled device. So that's pretty cool. And you can transmit those, and they do, by they put a radio and they put a certain frequency and they control the radio from your house, but the radio might be up on top of a mountain somewhere. So you get the signal up the radio and you send it telecommands to dial this way or dial that way or turn this on, turn this off. And there's radios like that all around the U.S., and we're just about out of time. Does anybody have, next week we'll start with Chapter 7, Licensing Regulations, and we get into some dry stuff, but this stuff you need to know, and I'll go over as quickly as I can. Does anybody want to make any comments, criticisms, or questions or suggestions? Please call now.
Yes, this is KC3. HVA, we don't normally put email addresses up on the website. If you want, I can. I have your phone number up there. It's up to you.
I'm okay with it if you want to do it, yeah.
Okay, I can go ahead and add that.
All right, sorry about that. Thank you. Anybody else?
Okay.
Okay. This has been the NLA Hems Net. This net is held every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. It's conducted by me, Terry, from Colorado, I am, KI0RE. That's my call sign. It's unique for the entire world. And I appreciate everybody's input, and I appreciate you listening in. Please contact your local ham club if you can. And I'm going to say that now the net is closed.